Oh yeah, that music means it's time for the last special E3 episode of DLC for 2014. That's right, all week long, DLC has meant your daily live coverage of E3. We've been here all week long, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, and now we're wrapping it up Thursday night, talking about all the games and announcements of the E3 video game convention here in sunny Los Angeles, where our newspaper of note thinks that Nintendo makes PlayStations. This show and all the shows this week have been made possible by our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace! They are bringing the show to you absolutely free, and we appreciate that. This is a very special episode. I have with me, as always, my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, producers on the line. If we can get maybe that tweet out, people are saying they don't hear us right now. I don't know if I see it coming out of the 5x5 feed. There's some business for people. I don't know what the dealio is, but hello, I'm happy to be here. I'm glad I'm back. I had fun calling in. And if there's a little background noise on my end, it's because I'm off in the wilderness in Wyoming. No, it's there might be a little noise, but I'm happy to be here, and it's going to be a great show.
Awesome. We are also very excited to have a new guest, one that I'm very pleased to welcome. Ashley Escueda is here. She is the senior editor at CNET and host of Tomorrow Daily, which is a brand new show that's going to debut on Monday. Welcome, Ashley.
Hey, guys. So good to be here. I'm glad I made it. I had to run over some people, but I made it.
Well, I'm sure that was worthwhile.
Totally worth it.
I'm sure you spent most of your day running over virtual people at E3 all day today.
There was a lot of that, yes. Well, you know, those French aristocrats, they're not going to kill themselves.
Yes, that is true. We all have been enjoying E3 this week. It's finally reached its stunning conclusion. And we're going to try to put this baby to bed today with picks for our favorite games of the show, things that we've been seeing. We'll hear about Ashley's hands-on, first-person stuff from today. And we're going to get your phone calls, as we always do, to find out what you guys have been excited about, watching streams and hearing about the new games that have been announced. You can call in 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714. If you're listening live, we'd love to hear from you. In fact, I believe we have a very special guest already on the line. Let's see if I can remember the phone number that he's calling from. And it is, it's David. There it is. David Nottingham, the designer of really one of Christian's big surprises from yesterday's show. Christian, why don't you introduce us to David?
Yeah. Hi, David. Can you hear us?
Yes. I was going to say, sorry for messing up your stream there. But I'm glad to have taken care of that. Here I am.
No, not at all. We're glad to have you. Christian was so impressed by the game. I went and checked it out today, and it's a wonderful, as you said, a wonderful art style. It's this 2D side scroller, except for when it's not, which I thought was so clever and so. Tell us a little bit about Counter Spy.
Yeah, so, it's the first game from our studio. We're kind of small, studio, Dynamite, based up in San Francisco. A bunch of ex-LucasArts folks after the sort of sad end of that once awesome, company. Plus some guys from Pixar, which is probably something that you may pick up from the art style. The visual style is something really obviously care a lot about. So the game, I think, when I talked to Christian about it, the game is basically a side-scrolling action stealth game. I kind of like that description. It's a side-scroller, except when it's not. We love side-scrolling action games. We played a ton of them as kids, like all of us on the team. We have different games that we kind of inspired us, whether it was Metroid or Flashback, or a lot of people see it as Rolling Thunder in the game. But we kind of wanted to do a bit of a modern take on it. And so for us, you know, we're building the game fully in 3D. And so we realized that what we could do with that was, you know, have your character running around the world in sort of the traditional classic side-scrolling view, but then you have all these cover areas where you can pop into cover, hide, and then swing the camera around into more of a full 3D view, and then you can kind of engage enemies. You can, you know, surgically take out guys with headshots, or if you want to, you can just sort of cause a chaos and mayhem with your sort of less stealthy weapons. The game, just interrupt me if you have any questions. The game is, it's a Cold War setting. It's sort of our alternate take on the Cold War. It's very much not meant to be kind of taken seriously. It's not a historically accurate portrayal of the Cold War. But essentially, you've got these two sides, these two superpowers. You've got the imperialists and the socialists. And they're kind of facing off on this space race, but they're not trying to put a man on the moon. They're trying to launch a nuclear missile at it. It seems like a bad idea to you, and you, the player, are an agent for Counter. Counter is this kind of world spy agency that basically is out to try and prevent that from happening.
Yeah, you referenced Rolling Thunder, and I certainly got that vibe from it. But it is really cool, as you describe, when it transitions from the 2D into that 3D, more of a traditional cover-based shooter, third-person cover-based shooter mechanic. I thought that was very clever. Christian, explain a little bit about what made it so appealing to you.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was the art style and then the fluidity of the movement. And the controls were really spot on, where, you know, when you found a place to duck behind cover and then take aim, you know, I feel like a lot of times, you know, you'll see a really gorgeous game, fluid animating game, and then sometimes you get stuck in animation roles, which I guess, you know, Dark Souls people like that aspect of it, but I can find it frustrating. But I thought it responded quickly to what I wanted to do. It's not taking itself seriously. As David was saying, the conflict is, you know, kind of made up. But as you told me yesterday, David, you know, based on the somewhat true reality of when we wanted to blow up the moon. and it's just really cool mixing the stealth. I love that side-scrolling stealth. I loved Mark of the Ninja, which is also a gorgeous 2D, you know, stealth game. And then I really like the spy versus spy kind of feel and atmosphere to it. I grew up on those comics as a kid. You know, they have a cheeky sense of humor and they don't take themselves too seriously. And I kind of got that vibe from this game as well. And then at the IndieCade booth where I first got hands on with it, you know, it was quieter over there than Sony's Hall. And I had the headphones on and the soundtrack was great. And you guys are doing something special with the soundtrack, you were telling me.
We're sort of, it's kind of a little bit of an unofficial guerrilla thing, but the music was composed by a friend of ours, Jesse Harlan, who we'd worked with at LucasArts, and it's very much in that kind of classic Bond sort of 50s jazz era. So one of the things we want to do is do just a kind of a limited edition vinyl pressing, so we get all the music on there. And Mark, who's our art director, you know, he really geeks out on doing all the kind of graphic design for stuff like that. So he designed the album cover. It looks like an old sort of Blue Note album. And then we wrote all those pretentious liner notes on the back. So I don't know if you've ever sort of looked at the back of like an old jazz album, but they always had these like uber sort of pretentious, like, oh, I was sitting in the back of the Village Cat Bank card and so-and-so came out in a smoky bar and all this sort of stuff. And so it's sort of an extension of kind of how we wanted to be playful with the world that we're trying to create. You mentioned Spidey Spy. Like, I totally grew up in Spidey Spy. Like, I read all my dad's Mad magazines when I was a kid as well. So I think there's probably just kind of a lot of different things that you pick up on as you're growing up. You know, being a huge Bond fan as well. And you kind of all pull together when you're coming up with a new game you want to make. And I should say it too, like I was sort of thinking about this today, because obviously we pretty much just spent the last 3 days talking nonstop about the game. But it does sort of make you think about some of the things about how you kind of got to where the game is. And I really realized, like, one of the reasons why I kind of love games right now, and I love kind of being part of a small team with what we're doing at Dynamite, is I feel like there's so many games out there now that are built by smaller teams where you really get a sense of sort of the personality of the people on the project. You know, like, the game is very much an extension of kind of who they are and what their influences were. And I feel like this is definitely kind of that for us.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Cool, it's on Vita, so you know I'm excited about it. I'm a big Vita guy, and if people want to find out more, Dynamite's website is dynamighty.com, and you are David Naughty on Twitter, Notty. Mm-hmm. I know you've had a long E3. You've been talking about this game a lot, but we really, really appreciate you coming on this show and chatting with us. And I know I'm certainly excited to see the game this summer because, you know, Vita love, you know what I mean?
Yeah, thanks for taking the time, David. Yeah, really appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Thank you. Sorry about these audio issues. This phone's getting thrown out the window right after this call.
Not at all, man. Get some rest. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Right. Take care, everyone.
Awesome. Thanks, I think I know what the issue was. You know, we forgot to start the hype train.
Oh, man. How could you forget?
We got to start that right now. Kick it, Miranda.
That's kind of amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, we're very pleased with that. And yet I always forget to play it right at the beginning of the show. And really, it's the last time we're ever going to get to play that until next year, that is.
But if you had played it before, we wouldn't have other people wouldn't hear it.
Exactly.
Because we had all those issues.
Exactly. All right. Ashley, tell me some of the things that you saw at E3, the things that you got you most excited.
Oh man, there was so much this year, which was great because last year it was all about consoles. It was all about, oh, it's Xbox One and PS4. And now it's games, which is really always the best year to go, is the year after consoles come out. So many good games. In particular, today, fresh in my mind, I saw some really good indie games. I really loved Ori and the Blind Forest. Which,
so beautiful, right?
Oh my goodness. I got chills watching the opening cinematic. It was very upsetting and sad, and it had so much heart. Yeah. And talking to the development team, it was really cool to learn that almost or every developer lives in a different country of that game.
Wow.
Huh. And the guy from Microsoft was saying that, I think he was the design director, was saying that they all, 5 years ago, that game could not have been made because technology did not exist to sort of send builds to each other all the time. And he was like, you know, we would not have been able to work as much and as quickly as we were able to, which I just thought was fascinating.
Super cool. Yeah.
Really neat. And I played Sunset Overdrive, and I have to say I'm converted. I was very skeptical about it. I was like, yeah, that looks pretty awesome, but I don't know if I would enjoy it. Like, I'm just not sure. And mm-hmm. I played the 8-player multiplayer, and it was ridiculous. I mean, so much fun. Everybody's
I think that's actually a great word for it, ridiculous. I mean, I think that they're embracing that ridiculousness.
Oh, yeah. It's just so ultra stylized and hyper violent and huge guns.
Colorful.
I mean, I was shooting a gun that was like a Chinese firework. It was so cool.
Yeah, I got to see the little room demonstration that they were doing of the single player campaign mode. And mm-hmm. they didn't show a ton more. It still kind of took place in that same milieu that the multiplayer stuff was taking place in, but they did talk about it in really interesting ways. One of the things, I don't know if this was on display in the multiplayer session because I didn't get to play that, but the way the meter works is that, you know, as you're stringing together these cool moves and you're grinding on stuff and you're bouncing off of things and you're catapulting yourself in the air and hooking on things, you are maintaining this style meter that keeps going up and up, and it unlocks the amps that you have queued up that you equipped on your character. And then once you hit, it has three levels of trigger, and once you hit each of those levels, your attacks start having the amp effect automatically. So if you have an amp that, for example, adds a tornado to your swing, you'll just start shooting tornadoes off as long as you keep
which
that multiplier
so amazing.
Going. It's just, I think it's a really smart system of a way to, you don't have to keep shooting that. You can keep doing what you're doing, but it rewards you doing it well and with style.
Right. And well, and I really liked that a lot of people at Insomniac kept saying, you know, it's so easy to pick up and play. And that's absolutely true. But it's also so hard to master, you know, so I have a feeling we're going to see some really interesting sort of, you know, maybe some competitive play that'll be really fun to watch with people who spend a lot of time with the game once it comes out. And they're just so good at it. Those are always the most fun people to watch play.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It definitely showed. I watched the designer playing it, and it definitely was skill based. It's not a game that that's on rails by any stretch. The other thing
you can hit a bunch of buttons and do okay. Like, I mean, it's definitely a game you could actually pick up and be okay, and you wouldn't feel like you were at some major disadvantage. But it's definitely people who are coming in first and developers watching them play is just a majorly different experience.
Yeah. Another thing that they mentioned in the meeting that I thought was really interesting is that the way you'll unlock the amps is that you'll, as they do in many games, you'll find blueprints or recipes for certain amps, and you'll have to collect components and assemble them. But they said that you specifically will not be assembling them in the way you do in a lot of games, like going to a workbench or something and pushing X and making it, that you will unlock the ability to do something in the game world that will unlock it, that will build the recipe. And I pressed them and asked them what that would be, and they said they're not ready to announce that yet, but it's a major game system. So that sounds really interesting to me. So
I like stuff like that a lot. I mean, I think that it's so hard to kind of innovate in that space. And so it's really fun to sort of hear that they are hiding, you know, hiding something cool and different. So I'm really looking forward to that. Another multiplayer game that I played today was the very last thing I played today was Splatoon for the Wii U of all things. And I had a lot of fun playing it. It was very easy to play, but I am concerned about if it's just multiplayer. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure if it'll kind of fly as well as, say, a Mario Kart, where you can play that single player with all the Grand Prix, or you can play the multiplayer and then you can play online. I don't know that it would be a $60 game if it's just a lot of, you know, that sort of paintball, squid paintball.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's exactly what Christian was saying the other night. And I got hands on with it as well. And I can see what you guys mean. I think it would be brilliant of them to literally release exactly what they showed, just that one level, before the end of this year for like $10. I think that
Or even a free demo, just the first level, and just try to, you know, work on the online multiplayer, some things like that. That would be great.
I think that'd be phenomenal. But, you know, hopefully if it is a $60 product, it will have some sort of more robust content and maybe even a single player section, although it doesn't really feel like a single player game. But it definitely doesn't.
I can't. The only way I was thinking about it as I was driving home today, and the only way I could think they could accomplish sort of a single player, not a campaign necessarily, would be almost like Smash TV. If anybody remembers that game, I'm sorry,
sure,
I'm totally revealing my age. I'm such an old lady. Where you would sort of clear a room or one of the zones that they have, and you would have to get a certain percentage of ink on the ground and then also sort of splatter enemies or maybe turrets that are shooting out other colored paint or something like that. And you just move on to the next room. It just opens a door that goes on to the next.
Yeah, I think that's a really great idea.
Yeah, like that seemed like a way to sort of do a single player campaign, because I can't imagine there being sort of a platform. There's really no, I mean, it has a long ways to go before they launch it, but just currently from what I played, it didn't seem like there was a real, you know, platformer or single player campaign in that, you know, in that thing. So I thought that might be a good way to do it.
If you're a fan of Smash TV, did you get a chance to see Assault Android Cactus? On the show floor?
Okay, I heard about this and I did not get to find it. I was so sad. I had rehearsal for my show every day this week. And so I had to leave the convention center by 2 every day. So the first day I got in like 2 hours and I ran around the convention center and just tried to pick, just play as much as I could and then left. And then the last couple of days I've just been just trying to get to things that I saw that I wanted to see.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, that game definitely. Please explain. I'm dying to know now because that's an amazing name.
Yeah, it is Assault Android Cactus. And it's very much that sort of shmup, bullet hell type of top down. You are robots in that very retro feel, but very modern graphics, very modern look. And it was another one of the myriad little indie games that were on display both at Sony and at Microsoft.
Oh, there was many good indies.
Yeah.
Did you see Love It Is a Dangerous Space Time?
I love that game so much. I saw it at PAX East and I couldn't stop talking about it. Isn't it just the most charming thing ever?
It is just charming as all get out. I could not believe just watching the television screen as the two devs were playing it. I was mesmerized at how adorable, and the art is just so clean and beautiful. And it's one of those games where you can really tell that a lot of love went into making it. And it's a very small team, but it was great. And I loved watching, you know, this orb float around and these little characters are climbing up ladders and shooting the turrets. And the two guys were kind of working together to get through this area. And man, I was really charmed by it.
Yeah. If anybody listening hasn't had an experience with this game or didn't hear me talking about it, it really is a wonderful idea. It's a platforming game inside of a shooter. So the spaceship is this little house.
Platforming shooter.
Yeah. And the house floats through space and needs to be shooting at things in space like you would in any other shooter. But the only way you can control it is by running around the house. And there's different stages or little stations, I should say, inside the house.
Rooms in the house.
Yeah, like if you want to shoot a laser on the left-hand side of the floating spaceship house, you have to run to the left-hand side little turret station and use that. But if the bad guy goes on the right hand side, you're not going to be able to shoot him with that. So you have to get off that, jump down, run over, climb up a ladder and get to the other station on the other side. And there's two of you inside that house doing that and trying to communicate to one another and say, oh my gosh, we need over here on the left. Okay, run over to the shield and move the shield around. Okay, run over to the steering wheel and steer the ship. It's wacky fun.
It's so much fun. It was just so cute. And I love platformers. That's like my number one love. I mean, I went crazy for Super Mario Brothers 3D World last year and I beat Champions Road, and that was a big accomplishment for me. And nice. And I just loved I love well controlled, you know, games that have these sort of, you know, skill to them, but not necessarily something that is just run in with guns, guns, guns. That's I love those games, but I really have a deep affection, a long time. That's my Mary. I would date a really great, you know, shooter or something like that. But platformers are my deep, that's my marriage. I've been married to platformers my whole life.
Yeah, and that's a game that doesn't ask you to choose one or the other. It gives you both.
No, it's really cool. Yeah. And I really loved it. I also played, you know, I got to say, I'm going to sound like such a little sappy girl right now, but I loved Yoshi's Woolly World.
Oh, what's not to love? If that makes me a sappy girly girl, then
my heart
your
just
club.
Turned into yarn. It was the cute. It was so saccharine. I have diabetes now. I can't. It was so
it's beautiful.
Sweet.
I call it whimsy. And I am a
it is very
sucker
whimsical.
For whimsy. Yes.
I was saying at the beginning of Tuesday morning when Nintendo had their press conference, and it was that weird, they had like a kind of robot chicken-esque sort of cut scenes that were very funny, and just, you know, Reggie and Iwata going at each other, Smash Brothers. I just thought to myself, this is why we need Nintendo in the industry, because they are so weird and whimsical, and they really just bring a completely different point of view to gaming. And I think that's important. And we might not get that as much from Sony and Xbox from the top down, but fortunately they're very developer friendly, which is fantastic. But oh man, like I screamed aloud at two things this week. Number one, which was the remaster of Grim Fandango.
Nice.
Huge Tim Schafer fan. Love Grim Fandango. Me and Manny Calavera, we go way back.
Can't wait to see more of that.
I was very excited. Well, they were doing online. They were doing this remaster. I don't know if you have seen that. There was a project with ScumVM. And they were doing a remaster, and they were trying to sort of redo all the textures in the game. And then they stopped suddenly. And now that kind of makes sense. I'm assuming because Disney bought Lucas, now it ended up being sort of either a cease and desist or maybe a, hey, we're, you know, thinking about letting them remaster it. So here's some NDAs and just stop doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was very excited about that. That just made me very, very thrilled. I was hoping for a Psychonauts remaster, which would be great.
Well, maybe if Grim Fandango does well.
If Grim Fandango does well, I'm going to cross my fingers for Psychonauts or even a sequel to Psychonauts, because really, who does not love Lungfishopolis? We got to return to Lungfishopolis somewhere. And then the other moment was the Legend of Zelda reveal, the world. And then, you know, he's like, you can ride all the way to the mountains. And all of a sudden, you know, this monster comes out from way in the distance and just shoots those lasers. And it was amazing. I couldn't believe it. It was so good. I'm so excited for that game. I wish it was coming out tomorrow. I'm just jazzed about the Legend.
Sadly, it's not. I think we all wish it's coming out tomorrow.
They need to hurry. They need to really hurry.
We got a lot to unpack there. I'm so excited. I love all the stuff that you brought up. I did notice though, we have a very special, another very special guest on the line. Mr. Sony platform himself, Anthony Carboni. Are you there, sir?
Oh, hi guys.
Oh, hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Great.
So
wonderful.
I have to commend you on the stellar work you did all week from the Sony PlayStation stage. I've been watching many of your interviews late at night after I wrap up these live shows, as well as seeing you projected above my head as I walk across the show floor. You did great work this week, sir.
I'm always with you, Jeff. I'm always projected just above your head.
Thank God for that. I want to talk to you about
I'm glad you enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
I want to talk to you about so many things, because you got really a lot of great discussions with designers, but we have to start, I think, with No Man's Sky. If you haven't seen Anthony's interview with Sean, the lead designer on No Man's Sky, a Happy Game or Hello Games, Hello Games, you should watch that immediately. It's on YouTube. The Sony YouTube channel, I believe. It's fantastic. You did a great job. You got some really interesting information out of him. So tell me about that.
So what's interesting is about 6 months ago, I guess it was, when they were showing off at the VGAs. Was that it? Was it that long ago already? Anyway, when they first showed their trailer, the day before they were in San Francisco, and they were like, come to the hotel, we have something to show you. And that's when they first showed me this game. And it is really, really, really ambitious, which I think is great because it's very emblematic of this entire E3. I think this E3 was sort of all about people biting off more than they can chew in the best ways, like really original game designs, really out there game designs, more so than I've seen at E3 in a couple of years. No Man's Sky is everybody is in the same universe. They have randomly generated an entire universe to scale.
To scale. That's the crazy part, is to scale.
It's scale. So amazing. I love this.
Yes. And so they've entirely, they wrote a random seed based on like a Minecraft server or something like that. You know, you put in a random seed and you get a map, but if the same person puts in the random seed, they get the same map. So everybody starts with the same randomly generated universe. And from what Sean's told me, the universe is based on some very simple physical laws. So every universe has, you know, it's got stars, and stars have solar systems. And depending on how close or far planets are from those solar systems, they have life, they have atmospheres. Depending on the chemical composition of the planet, maybe those atmospheres are breathable, maybe they're not. There's liquid, but it's not necessarily water. They all have randomly generated wildlife. And the deal is every single player, anyone who boots up this game is going to start on a different planet than any other player has ever started on. And then you get into your ship and you explore this persistent universe. And the whole thing has this look to it like 60s and 70s pulp edition sci-fi covers, you know, like a Heinlein cover or an Isaac Asimov cover, just like really amazing, with just these rich, like reds and greens and purples. And it's just this gorgeous universe to explore kind of solitary on your own, but you can come across another person.
It's just highly unlikely, right?
Like other places. It's super unlikely because, you know, you think about it, we're all starting on different edges of the universe.
Right.
Like, we may cross each other's paths, but think about, like, the vastness of space. What are the odds if 50 people are flying around in spaceships that they're going to come across each other, you know?
And,
that's what I think is interesting.
It's
like,
it's crazy that there, it's true exploration, because if something hasn't been discovered, then it hasn't been discovered for anyone. And if you discover something, you get to upload it for everybody, that now it is a thing that people know about that exists in this universe.
Yeah, that's what's great. We all share a star map, and you can choose whether you want to make your discovery public or not. So anybody who comes across this planet, they'll see like Jeff Cannata discovered this planet, but you don't necessarily have to put that on everybody's star map. They may have to like wait until they come across it randomly on their own. But what I think is really great is that Sean made sure to say that this is not just a walk around. You know, this is not like an indie walking simulator 3.0.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's stuff
to
do.
This is a game where the wildlife is hostile, right? Or maybe it's not, but if the wildlife is hostile, then you have to decide how to deal with that. You come across other ships that are AI controlled. I mean, you've seen entire fleets in the trailer. So it's nice. It's not like you're going to be putting around in empty space waiting to come across something. There's a lot of action, and you entirely decide how you're going to come up against it. Now, that said, they haven't shown a lot of this thing yet.
Yeah.
And I think they're letting our imaginations run a little wild, which is cool. But at the same time, like when I talk, like when I asked Sean about it, he's like, I know it seems like we're being withholding. He's like, but my biggest fear is that I give you a little bit of detail and you extrapolate on it, and then you sit down to play.
Yeah.
And whatever you came up with in your imagination was not what you actually wound up playing.
He doesn't
so they're
want to
being
be
kind
Molyneux.
Of like closely guarded about it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Nobody wants to pull a Fable, man.
Right.
Like, no one wants to do that at 3. But this is great. I mean, to me, even if it was just like a get in a spaceship and kind of cruise around and, you know, fight, you know, hostile wildlife and try to stay alive in a, like in a very lonely way, that to me is my favorite kind of sci-fi, you know?
Yeah.
And that to me is what I really love in games. So, you know, you and I have talked about that, I think, before a few times, where it's just like, if you put me in a world and that world has physical rules that I can understand and sort of try to exploit, I'm going to have a lot of fun.
Right.
Yeah.
I just like seeing new things and going to new places that are impossible. So, No Man's Sky was definitely the highlight of the entire show for me.
So any other quick hits that you want to mention of games that we should have on our radar over and above, or not above, but in addition to No Man's Sky?
Yeah, totally. You know, I didn't get to venture too far outside of the PlayStation booth, but I can tell you what I saw there. Number one, Night in the Woods. I really love.
Yeah, that's a little
my bomb fall. Yeah, it's great. You are a cat who drops out of college and moves back to your hometown.
Another
and have
one
to live
of those
with your parents.
As one does, you know.
Another one of those.
As cats do.
And it's so funny. Within 30 seconds, it's all about like dealing with coming home and your friends that never went off to college are still there, and like your hometown hasn't really changed and you're kind of depressed. But within 30 seconds of playing this game, I got yelled at by a racist alligator that told me that climbing animals like cats and squirrels should have to pay more taxes because they get to use the town vertically and no one else does. And it's unfair because we're lazy.
Amazing.
And I was like, this is really good.
That's hilarious.
And they're like, this is real life, man.
That's all I
That's great.
I am
awesome.
So into it. Like, it's very much like, it's a little bit of platforming. And from what I can tell, it's mostly adventure gaming. You know, anytime you talk to somebody, you can choose between 3 replies and everything sort of spirals and builds based on your choices. So that one's really great. And then the other one I saw that I really loved, I mean, I'm sure you've already talked about Bloodborne. Everybody's talking about Bloodborne.
Yeah.
I don't need to say anything about Bloodborne. But Galaxy was the other one.
Right.
Which is a game that looks like an 80s kind of shmup, but it's done in a really interesting way. Like, everything aesthetically says, like, Darius Gradius, like one of those things. All the cutscenes are very like 80s anime. It looks very much like Mazinger or Captain Harlock.
Yeah.
But when you're playing, it's actually free roaming. And the enemies use an extremely advanced AI. When the developers were telling me about it, they were like, we don't understand why really complicated enemy AI is saved for things like Far Cry 3, things like these big, you know, multi-million dollar games. So they dropped me into this game, they had me play it, and I was trying to play it like an old school shmup, and it was amazing. These enemies were predicting my moves, they were chasing me around, and not only that, but they made the environment very hostile. So things that looked like they should be crates filled with power-ups or cap or tanks filled with fuel. If I tried to shoot them, they would like destroy me. They would go bouncing around using real physics. So the whole environment is against you. And the ship controls in a very interesting way. You have forward and reverse thrusters, and you have sudden brakes, and then you have your trigger lets you fly up vertically out of the game plane. So you're incredibly maneuverable. And when all that stuff comes together, there was this moment where I flew up through this tiny little hallway into this giant open cave, and three enemy alien factions were crowded around in that cave. And I immediately hit the brakes and reversed. It was like, no, thank you. And then the three enemy factions saw that each other were in there. It's these bugs, these aliens, and these robots, basically. They saw each other after I backed out, and all the other factions hate each other, and so they started shooting each other.
Crazy.
Wow.
And, yeah, it was something I did not expect, because the whole thing looks like this 80s Gradius clone.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really amazing. It was very, very clever.
That is so awesome, dude.
I didn't get to see that. I'm bummed now.
Yeah.
Now I want to go back to the convention center and make them reopen everything.
Yeah, right? If you can make that happen, I'm with you.
Yeah, I don't think I can.
Although I do like sleep.
I can convince people of things sometimes, but those convention center guards they're hardcore.
Yeah, that's the guys who did Skulls of the Shogun too. That which was a really cool, very cool game. It's these guys make games that are really outside the box that take
that
sort of old classic games and really reinvent them. So fantastic. Thanks so much, Anthony. I know you've been busy all week like a madman. I really appreciate you taking the time to come hang out with us and share that stuff.
Oh, of course, man. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. I will talk to you soon. And if you guys want to see the two of us streaming stuff, we've been doing that regularly over on Anthony's Twitch channel. So it's Anthony Carboni, twitch.tv/AnthonyCarboni, right?
Yep. Come by and watch us be bad and complain about games.
All right, dude. Get some rest. Great work this week.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oops.
He's just delightful.
Isn't he?
Just delightful. I know Meredith, so that was the first time I had talked to him. So now I feel like I know the Sony announcer family.
Yes, they did a great job, and I'm so glad he got to call in. Spicer, are you still there? You've been quiet, my friend. What do you got that got you excited this
week? Well, a lot got me excited, but a little got me more excited than Squarespace. So you want to tell the good people about where you host JeffCanada.com, and then I can dive into either Destiny, Borderlands the pre-sequel, or a little more about Valiant Hearts. Your pick.
Well, that is the reason that we're able to do this show. It's because Squarespace has graciously sponsored this show. And I'm so happy that they have, because they are a service that I use, that I love, that I can genuinely recommend without reservation. Squarespace is the place to go if you have any reason to create an online destination. You want to make a blog, you want to make a portfolio, you want to make an online shopping store, small or large. They are the place to make something that looks beautiful, that looks unique, and that works really well and is easy to use. Not only that, they never go down. They have 99.999% uptime. People have tried to crash their sites. They just don't go down. They have a fantastic service, and they make it easy to create websites with simple, easy, beautiful templates and drag and drop functionality. So it's all what you see is what you get. If you want to take a template that they've got that looks really cool and make it your own, all you got to do is slide stuff around, drag in a new picture, change the font. It's so simple. It's super simple to update your website, to maintain your website. And every website includes commerce. So it's got online commerce that comes with the package. If you're trying to sell something, they make it easy. You just plug and play. It works. Plus, it's inexpensive. Plans start at only $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And if you want to try it out, you don't have to pay a cent. Not only that, they're not even going to take your credit card. So if you want to try it out, there's no, well, I'll try it for a month and then it'll automatically charge me. And if I forget to cancel it before the month and I'm on the hook for paying, no, none of that. They don't even take your credit card. It's so easy. It's so simple. And we want to hook you up with 10% off because you listen to DLC. You listen to DLC, we'll give you a DLC. I just thought of that. Anyway, go to squarespace.com/DLC. And use the promo code Jeff Sent Me. That's J-E-F-F-S-E-N-T-M-E. All one word, Jeff Sent Me. Squarespace.com/DLC. Check it out. If you have any reason to make a website, support them because they support us and they make this show possible. We really appreciate that. Squarespace.com/DLC and that promo code Jeff Sent Me. Thank you for reminding me to do the business, Mr. Spicer. And now you need to do the business. I want to hear about – tell me about Borderlands the pre-sequel. How about that?
Sure. So the biggest thing I think about this game is how little you've heard of it, I feel like. You know what I mean? Like Borderlands, you know, when it came out and then it came out again with the new art style, like it was buzzing. Borderlands 2, I feel like – you know, people lost friends to Borderlands 2 because they're still playing it. you know, just hours and hours of content. And then this game came out and, you know, it's not, it, I feel like it, you know, it's the Arkham Origins. It's the game in the franchise by the other people. It's the BioShock 2. It's not Borderlands 3, right? But yeah. I don't quite understand, like 2K had what, three games at their booth this year, and Borderlands the pre-sequel was a big part of their booth space. And I don't understand quite why so many people, why I feel like there's an absence in discussion about this game, because if you like Borderlands, this is more to like. And you know, it hits all the,
I think it's because it's current gen or last gen now. You know, it's because all the hype and excitement is for next gen stuff, and then here comes this game that is quote unquote past last gen, and I think people overlook it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that is the main reason. But I mean, you know, if you have a PC, this game, like Borderlands 2 looked so gorgeous on a PC in high settings. This game looks gorgeous. And it, you know, the art assets hold up so well on a PS3 and Xbox 360. I think if you have one of those consoles and you enjoyed Borderlands 2, you know, I think it's foolish to overlook this game. It's like when Garnet was on a couple of weeks ago, Jeff, you know, he was talking about, we had the whole discussion about living in the now. And I too want the new sexy hotness for my new consoles that I, you know, dumped a bunch of money into. But if I can have an amazing gaming experience on a console that I already own, it's not like I need to go out and rebuy a PS3 because I bought a PS4. You know what I mean? Like I didn't trade it in. I still have it. And it still controls well, you know, from my hands-on. I don't know if the writing is up to the same level as Borderlands 2. I know some people didn't appreciate the humor in it, but I thought the game hit its notes well and it did what it was trying to do. Of course, Borderlands, those games being the big games that they are, it's hard to sit down at the game on a show floor and really listen to what everyone is saying and get that world experience. But the moon setting is cool. It's, you know, if you're a fan of the series, you've been made aware of these events, right? And everything that goes down. And it's everything that you love about those games, and it's more of it. And so that's the main reason I wanted to bring it up. I don't think this game will win anyone over, right? If you passed on Borderlands 2, don't go get this. And I don't think it's
fan service, right? It's made for people who are already, it's preaching to the choir.
Right. And it is a stopgap, right? You know, it's another game to come out and it's a great game for a financial, but I think it's easy as a gamer to buy into that pessimism and be like, well, it's a money grab. Okay, maybe it is, but all games kind of are because people want to make money on them. And, you know, I thought Batman Arkham Origins, despite its shortcomings, was a fantastic game. I love that universe. I was super excited to go back. It was one of my, you know, geekiest, most enjoyable games from last year on just a pure fan service level. And I think Borderlands the pre-sequel can be that for a lot of people this year. So, you know, I understand you want to play on the new hotness, but this is a game that's coming out for a console you have. Don't overlook it. It would be my takeaway.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the order 1886, because I got to play that hands-on, and I wasn't really sure. We've had several people on all this week who have talked highly
Burnside
about it.
Burnside loved it.
You gotta check it out. Burnside loved it. Raj called in and he loved it. Diute. I got worried about mispronouncing his last name, but it's Diute. Anyway, so I was really excited to check it out. I didn't know what to expect after seeing that bit of trailer in the press conference, but I think I understand the game now.
Okay.
First of all, the best graphics. I mean, I think you got to say The Division in that sentence as well, as far as best graphics at E3, but it's
so good. The
right?
Division.
Oh my gosh. But I have never seen character models other than maybe that Uncharted 4 trailer. But again, that's just a trailer. We don't know. This was a game I played. I had it in my hands. I played it. I shot stuff. I was running around. I've never seen character models that looked more cinematic, more lifelike. It was stunning.
How do you feel about the
Witcher
cropped
was really
letterboxing?
Good too. Witcher 3 was really good.
The cropped letterboxing? You mean of when it's not in the shooter mode?
Yeah, yeah. I mean when it. How much of that is maintaining? You know, it's like the atmosphere. Like, oh, it's cinematic versus. Oh crap! We can't render all this. You know.
Oh, maybe I don't know.
Right? Yeah. No. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. But also, I mean, I actually appreciate that in a lot of places, because sometimes I just want to play the game, and so to cut to, you know, a cinematic, or it just, for me, it takes me out of the game a lot of the time, and I just want to stay in it.
Yeah.
So some of that I really actually appreciate.
I didn't really even notice the letterboxing, to be quite honest with you. Maybe if I had heard people talking about it before, I would have kept my eye out for it, but it certainly didn't bother
me. That's good.
I played a shooter level. It was a full-on cover-based shooter, and the weapon that I was using the entire time was friggin' awesome, looked amazing. It was this gun that shot this sort of gas pellets at the enemy that would pop when they hit them and release this gas that didn't really hurt them. But then you shot the alternate fire of the weapon, which shot like this phosphorus that ignited the gas. And it looked absolutely incredible. It was full of particle effects, and it sparked and shimmered, and it looked like phosphorus, like you see in movies. So it really cool mechanic right there, because I sort of could paint a section. There was the part at the beginning where there's these guys on the second floor balcony who are shooting down at you, and you're behind cover, and I could paint a couple of them and then use one alternate fire, and it would ignite that entire area. So cool. So cool. And then, you know, I progressed and went to a cutscene and sort of did a little bit of a figure this out, how we're going to get out of the situation, which was basically just walk around the room until you can, you know, use something. But I kind of got it. I feel like this is Sony Santa Monica doing Uncharted. It's the same genre, so to speak. It's the same gameplay loop.
Really?
It's Uncharted. It's Uncharted.
Is there running and jumping and climbing?
No, I don't mean it in that way. I mean it in the way that Uncharted is a game that exists to tell you a story, right? And it's all about this cinematic story that's happening that is punctuated by moments of action. And I feel like the moments of action in The Order are, I think, a better shooter than Uncharted ever was. This is much more a really effective cover-based shooter, at least the level that I played. But it's the same general idea of it's there to tell you this single player story. And though it looks like it could be a squad based multiplayer shooter, it is not. It is a single player game only, but the squad is there to be interesting characters and to convey this cinematic storytelling, which is, I think, very akin. It reminded me in large part of Uncharted.
Did you get to ask any questions about the length? That's the rumor I had heard buzzing around the show floor, is that this game might feel short to some.
I didn't inquire about that, and it didn't occur to me. I mean, we played a level, and you know, I'm guessing it'll probably be in that 8 to 10 hour range, probably on the shorter side. But if it has a really interesting story, certainly the setting is fascinating. It's this alternate history idea with cool weaponry. There was one of the characters that I was running alongside had that like Tesla coil gun. And I had that, as I mentioned, that sort of phosphorus gaseous thing. So it's this wonderful alternate history. And if the story is good, the acting certainly seemed to be top notch, and the character models, the graphics alone are worth the price of admission. I mean, it looked like a movie set. It was stunning, stunning. And lots of wonderful effects layered on top to make it sort of have, you know, focus and like a layer of – this sounds weird, but it's like a layer of velvet over everything. It didn't look like video game graphics anymore. It looked like this kind of painterly world.
So
yeah,
that's awesome. I mean, it's by Ready at Dawn, and honestly, they have not made a game that has let me down. I double checked. So I'm looking at their wiki. It was Daxter, God of War: Chains of Olympus, God of War: Ghosts of Sparta for Vita. I loved all of those. I thought they were great Vita games. And then they did the Okami port for the Wii, which was such a wonderful port of a wonderfully beautiful game. And now they're working on this, where it's kind of like, okay, yeah, you get my money. You know what I mean? Like, the game looks beautiful. It looks like it's right up my alley. And then their past work has all been stuff that I've loved, where it's kind of, this is the type of thing that gets me on that hype train. You know what I mean? It's not like from a developer that made that game you hated last year comes this new game. Right. Yeah, I'm stoked. Oh man. Seriously though, I am going to have to sell my daughter to afford 2015. Like, there is no way.
But think of all the money you'll get for your daughter.
There's no way, man. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Speaking of crazy,
there's games on every console that I'm excited about, including handheld.
Yeah. Well, is there anything specifically in handheld that you wanted to bring up, Ashley?
I really enjoyed Smash Brothers on 3DS, so I'm excited about that. That's this year. But I've just really been enjoying, like, so God, the 3DS. Me and my 3DS walked. I basically went to E3 this year to street pass. Like, I have a very serious street passing problem. But I really enjoyed that, and I just really enjoyed walking around. I have to say, I think the big story for me this year at E3 was indies. There were so many good indie games and so many good ones on. Like, I want to get a Vita now.
Yes.
I think that's the only quote-unquote console I don't have, and I've heard so many great things about it, and I saw Tearaway last year at E3, and I just absolutely loved it.
How much did Christian pay
now
you?
With PlayStation Now and Remote Play, I'm like,
It's so good. Indies on the Vita or make the console worth owning, but indies in general, I feel like, and Jeff, we talked about this, I don't remember, one of these live shows, where I think there have been so many amazing indie games at this show, but I almost feel like they got a little less of a showcase than they did last year. Like, Microsoft's booth was a pretty large space, and then they had, like, I don't know what to call them, like game hallways or game gutter corridors, right? Where it's like they have the big games with the big splashy stuff with Forza Horizon 2 with an actual car sitting there and, you know, come see this game, and Sunset Overdrive with the huge space and, you know, all this stuff. And then they had the little alleys that had rows and rows of games. And I feel like sometimes the last game in those alleys would be a different game than that's at the front, and it would be, you know, an amazing, beautiful indie game that you didn't see. And like Sony had Devotion part of their booth, but then some of the other stuff was sprinkled around. Like, for instance, when after the Sony press conference, one of the games I was more jazzed about was Abzu, however you say it, A-B-Z-U. And
yeah, I think it's Abzu.
I don't know if it was playable or not, because I didn't see it. And it just...
Yeah, I don't think it was there.
I would have loved to have played it, but you know what I mean? It's like...
They have these like weird sort of random assortment of indie games like sprinkled throughout a booth, and it's really hard to find what you're looking for. And if you don't know what you're looking for and you're just looking to find, to check something out or just gander, like browse, it's actually even harder because it's so difficult. I would have loved to have seen Blind Forest.
So like good.
Up front, big, you know, something big for that game. And I really hope that they kind of push that game, because I was so impressed.
Yeah, I was all the people that wanted The Last Guardian. You got The Last Guardian. It's just TV now and on Microsoft platform. I mean, it
yeah, and just not on.
It's
not
got
on
that
PS4,
same
sorry,
spirit. I feel like it's got that wonderful feeling of
it really
of,
does.
And like of Hadouken or how do you say it?
I was thinking of Hocus Pocus,
yeah, right? That's what you're talking about?
It's great.
It's beautiful, and it has, you know, it kind of got that flower vibe, or not flower, Eden. God, my brain is so, this is the end of E3 show, right? Where it's like,
it really
yeah, it's crazy. My brain is scrambling.
Let's let some other people queue us up. We got a bunch of people here on the line waiting to ask questions. So I have somebody on the line here from the 909 What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what did you want to talk about? Hello? 909. No.
Nobody.
All right. Oh, there he was, and I muted him again.
Oh, there was a person.
Hello, are you there, sir?
Thank you very much. Yes, tonight, 2N1T. How's it going? We were listening to what you were talking about, and we love E3 this year. There was a lot of good stuff on there, but some of the stuff you guys were talking about, we weren't really pulling the same way. We're on our way back from E3 on the way to our house. And one of the things was, you know, you guys were talking about No Man's Sky. And you guys are sitting there saying, you know, oh, this is going to be a game about how, you know, there's so many galaxies that we can explore out everywhere, and people are going to be like, you're not going to run into other people. But the problem is, like, once this game gets this hype and gets it going, it gets it all going, you get a couple thousand copies out there, a million copies out there sold, you know, that's that galaxy stuff gets all very, very fast. You're going to sit there and be like, boom, boom, boom. You know, you're not going to sit there and just compare galaxies, but like, I'm not going to want to share that this is because it should be happening. So we were looking forward to seeing it, but, you know, we didn't get a chance to see it at the first initial, but we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is an interesting idea of, you know, they're saying that it is truly infinite, and it certainly can be because it's procedural. So if all the planets get used up, well, we just make more, you know, in the sense that the universe in the game is always expanding because it's always generating new planets for you to find. And you have the choice of either going to planets that have already been discovered and points of interest on that planet have already been discovered. So even if you find a planet and it's like, Ashley Esqueda has already discovered this planet. Well, maybe she discovered the planet and discovered a part of the planet and then moved on to something else. Or the planet is so big that she didn't get a chance to discover the entire planet. So now I can go and look for things that may exist on this planet that she didn't see. I can go to the bottom of the ocean and look for some weird sea creature, or I can discover a space station that's in one corner of this planet. And if the planets are truly planet size, it certainly took human beings a heck of a long time to explore everything.
I think a lot of people are worried about, and I saw a couple of people mention this in the chat, server space, like where is this going to be hosted? And if it's infinite, how do you... The technical side of it is sort of one of those things that's there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered in terms of how that game is going to be stored and delivered to everybody.
Well, it certainly does sound too good to be true. So you can certainly excuse people for feeling like, well, I don't want to get my hopes up because this does sound too good to be true.
I'm cautiously optimistic. Yeah. Like I want to believe. I'm enthusiastic and I want to believe.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I love is listening to the lead designer, Sean, I can't remember his name, Murray, is it? Discuss the game because he's so humble and seems like such a good guy. I love that. And he's really forthcoming about the game. And he has said one of the most interesting things in this entire E3 conference, for my money, was that he's experienced two kinds of people that ask him about the game. The first kind is sort of our generation of gamers, people who grew up where games gave you quests and you fulfilled those quests and you moved on, you did something else. And the second kind of people are the people in the generation below ours and even younger who grew up in a Minecraft world where the game doesn't tell you what to do. The game doesn't even ask you to do anything. There are no quests. There is no agenda. There is just a world. And you go into that world and you make of it what you choose. And it's a playground in which it's not just make your own fun. It's exist and do what you will. And I think that's the kind of game. I mean, he very specifically said there will not be any quests in this game. There will not be anybody telling you to collect 10 space chickens. He says, you know, if you do something, you may be rewarded for it, or there may be consequences for it, but you don't know that going in, just like life and just like Minecraft, really. So I think this is really more a spiritual successor to those types of games. And I think it's scary for some of us that aren't used to that to think about it, but it certainly is an exciting.
But maybe for kids growing up, it's something that is so natural to them.
Yeah.
Well.
I can't be more excited about that game, but yes.
I am sad about no space chickens.
Well, there may be space chickens. There's just nobody telling you to kill 10 of them.
Yeah, that's okay. Fair enough.
All right, there's another person on the line here from 407. Where are you calling from? What's your name and what do you want to talk about?
Hey, Jess, this is Mollick calling from Tampa, Florida. First, I want to thank you and Christian for the hard work you guys did all week. I mean, you guys have done a tremendous job covering E3.
Thanks.
And also, sorry for harassing you guys on Twitter all week. I just want to ask two questions, one specific, one general. The specific question was about Project Morpheus, if you got a chance to try it out, and how that felt using that along with the Move controllers, if that made a difference from using the Oculus Rift.
Mm-hmm.
And the second more general question I had is, what did you get to see all the games at E3? Do you notice any like trends that might indicate where the generation is headed towards? I think for the last generation, for me, it was all about HDE and also having a connected community to play online with. For me, I mean, what I've seen is that developers seem to be using online in more creative ways than just simple, I shoot you and you shoot me back, kind of like how Dark Souls does it, or Evolve is using it. That's my two cents. I'll take my answers off the air. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks for the call, man. Let's do the first one first. I tried all day today to get into Project Morpheus. They were jam-packed, and they were swamped with media trying to get in. I don't know. Ashley, did you have a chance to see Project Morpheus?
I did not. My co-host for my show did, and he had the most insanely ridiculous pictures. It looked like he was going to an ice cream cone rave.
Yeah, well, we've all been
to
one of those.
And it was the best thing ever.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people that have tried it and have also tried Oculus. And
I got to try
Oculus. As have I, and I loved it. And I have heard pretty much across the board from everybody I've spoken to that's worn both that Morpheus isn't quite at the Oculus level yet, that there's a little bit of motion blur when you turn your head, that the latency is a little worse, and that the field of vision is a little reduced. So you do feel the edges a little more than you do in Oculus. But I reserve judgment until I actually get my eyes on personally.
You guys weren't able to get in. I just walked up and said, I love the Vita, and they gave me one. So,
Well...
No big deal. Like,
being a fanboy has its privileges, I suppose. Yeah. But let's talk about that second
part. No, they laughed in my face and said, no appointment, get out.
Let's talk about the second part of that question, though, with sort of trends that you see coming out of this E3. Do you guys have any trends that have struck you about where the industry is headed?
I tweeted this, and it's E3 2014. These are the trends. 2015, co-op multiplayer, see something in the distance, go there, bro. See it, go to it. 2015. Those are my takeaways from everything. Is about this four-player cooperative get along experience.
Yeah, all like this play together is like the big play together in 2015. Yeah.
Play together in 2015 and go over to that mountain that's over there.
Right, yeah, you can ride to the mountains.
Well, I think that there's such an explosion in the MOBA space, in the cooperative, team-based, even the Twitch revolution of, hey, we all want to be doing the same thing together at the same time. I think that's a natural evolution, and I love it. I think it's sort of the MMOification of all games, where the line between what makes an MMO and what doesn't is getting blurred more and more. And a game like The Division is, for all intents and purposes, an MMO. I mean, it's got loot, it's got progression,
it really
it's got your friends, it's got this giant world where you can drop in and drop out. The line is blurring.
I think the technical side of things has finally reached, we've kind of reached this tipping point where so many people now have access to faster, I say faster, it's just such a joke internet here in the States. I say faster for us, but we have enough people, enough gamers have fast enough internet to where we're able to sort of have these online matches and online play. And I really think that this is a really, I always say this, of course, because it's always from every moment going forward, it's the best time ever to be a gamer. Like there's never going to be a time in the future where it's a worse time to be a gamer. And that's really exciting for me.
Yeah. So as long as we keep living.
Yeah, just keep. I'm hoping for full upload of my consciousness into a robot. I would like to be a Cylon before I die. That's literally my last final bucket list item is becoming.
Mine is already a planet on No Man's Sky. I just don't know if anyone will see it or find it.
If I
See, maybe that's the future of No Man's Sky. Maybe in 60 years, you'll be able to upload your consciousness onto a planet, No Man's Sky.
I'm ready. Let's make that happen.
And maybe we're living that right now.
We're all Did in I just No blow Man's Sky. Minds? We're just No Man's Sky trying to experience itself subjectively.
We're living in No Man's Sky right now. This is entirely a simulation.
I think that is definitely another
infinite
another trend that you could pull out of this E3 is that for all of the explosions we saw and shooty man shoot 'em up shoots, the game that everyone is talking about is No Man's Sky. Is this game where you don't do any of that? I mean, there's shooting in it, yes.
There's nothing to do except what you
make. Right, and it's from a small team. It's a game where we saw no CG trailer for it. They debuted it by showing you in-game flying around stuff. You know, it's a different thing, and hopefully it inspires some other teams that will take that concept and be making their version of that, whatever that may be. I think it could be cool.
Well, one other thing kind of related to this technology stuff that we haven't talked about at all is PlayStation Now, you know, running on the show floor, and I think is a very bold move of Sony. I know it goes wide. I believe it's July 31st is kind of when the beta goes wide for everybody.
30th.
But on the show floor, one of the games included with PlayStation Now when the beta launches is Ultra Street Fighter 4. And going, you know, actually what you were saying about fast enough internet or being able to do like. That's a bold move, I feel like, to launch the fighting game. You know what I mean? Like Mortal Kombat, it's a great fighting game. Mm-hmm. It's not Street Fighter. You know what I mean? It's not competitive. Ultra Street Fighter 4, playable via PlayStation Now. I played it on the floor. It was fantastic, but that's such a controlled experience of PlayStation Now. I don't care what they say. Like, actually, our servers are in China. I don't believe you. I think they're under this current. but yeah, exactly. You know, if that works and that comes out and I can play a fighting game over that thing, that's incredible. And then I can play it on my Sony Bravia TV without needing a console. Like, I think the tech and even Sony in their press conference, they were like, we're innovating, you know, we're doing PlayStation Now. We got Project Morpheus. And I kind of think they just glossed over PlayStation Now. And I think a lot of people, you know, at E3 did this year as well, because it was just a back wall and it's games that are old because, you know, it's PlayStation 3 games.
Yeah, it was kind of a
second
thought.
But man, if that thing works, did either of you play around?
I did not.
I got to use it at CES when they first announced it.
Right. Isn't
it
that crazy? Like that blows my mind. I would picture, like, I could XCOM, cool. Release XCOM via PlayStation Now, right? Like, that makes sense. But Street Fighter, that's a, you know, they're coming in with their shirt off, ready to fight. You know what I mean? Like, that, it's crazy.
They Hulk Hogan did. They just rip the shirt right off. They're like, rah, I'm ready. I love it. No, I love this. And I think that's a really important evolution in gaming. I've always wanted to, you know, grab something handle. I'm hoping Nintendo does something very similar with whatever the next iteration of the 3DS is. I'm actually hoping that somehow it's kind of integrated in such a way that, for example, I would be able to use it instead of my gamepad.
Why isn't that? Why can't we do that now?
Somehow,
you should be able to do that now. It's stupid. They launched both of those at the same time.
I was really bummed that wasn't part of the functionality of the Wii U. And I'm wondering if maybe it exists and maybe we just haven't seen it yet and they are still working on that. but yeah, I definitely would like to see Nintendo kind of go in that direction, because obviously their handheld is keeping the Wii U afloat at this point, because the Wii U is really it's an anchor. And I know that they said that they've moved a lot of consoles because of Mario Kart 8, which is fantastic because Mario Kart 8 is amazing. But on that same note, I really wish that they would sort of integrate. I'm excited about Amiibo.
Are you?
That was so awesome.
You want to buy little toys?
Yeah, like, I'm really excited about that, because here's the thing. Like, I like Disney Infinity and I like Skylanders. I like the idea of that, but it's for one game. And so you have all these figurines that do nothing in other games. Yeah. Like, you just have a big collection of stuff that only works in one game. And that, to me, sucks.
Well, we have to see what the other games are. I mean, it works in Smash Brothers.
Well, they're
so
saying
far.
Already, like, they're saying Mario Kart and Smash Brothers. Like, these are, I'm assuming, a lot of first-party Nintendo games that have some multiplayer element will incorporate Amiibo.
Yeah. It makes sense.
For me. And the thing is if I get to play Mario Kart 8 as Samus, I'm in. Yeah. Just sign me up. Like, I'll buy it.
I haven't heard about the Mario Kart 8 functionality yet. I'm not sure I've heard that. But I know Smash Brothers, they said Smash Brothers would be the first game to support it. So maybe they're patching in Mario Kart. I haven't heard that. But I think it makes sense for them to use it across the board. And I think it should be, I should be able to take my little Samus and put her in wherever game I want. That would be awesome.
Right. I mean, and I get not single player game. Like if you're playing Super Mario 3D World, like it would be weird to like put Samus in that game. Like I get it. And then you got to animate a cat suit for her and that'll be just bizarre. And kind
that's
of
a
amazing.
License to print money right there.
It really is. And you know, Link gets his little green cat suit. And I mean, it could be crazy. But at the end of the day, I get where it could be really cool. And for a really good example is Splatoon. So you have these little squids, and then maybe in the future for, you know, online play or multiplayer, you're able to bring in a character that is, you know, from another Nintendo IP, and it's, you know, oh, I'm going to play as Donkey Kong or whatever. And they have a way to sort of say like, okay, well, in this universe, here's how, you know, this character can be integrated. So maybe he can't dip into the ink like you can with all the squid kids.
I like that. They should use that. TM.
Squid kids. And yeah, that's trademarked. You can call me Splatoon and I'll license it to you for a very low rate. But yeah, like something like that where they say, okay, this is sort of how this non-franchise character kind of fits into this world. I think that would be really cool.
And
I mean, I think it really works for things like Mario Kart and obviously Super Smash Bros. Like these are the two that I really want to see it integrated into because obviously I want to be able to use an amiibo and race a kart as, you know, whoever is not available as a racer. I'm still very sad about Boo not being an available racer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be an amazing functionality. I think knowing Nintendo, I would be shocked if there isn't like only two games that use it from now until, you know,
of course.
4 years
oh, yeah.
from now.
Until there's no more
Can
Wii
I put
U.
This?
Yeah, of course. Even if it was one game, that's the same as Disney Infinity and Skylanders. So, I mean, it's even if we get just one game, then it's like equal, but I always want to see it.
Can I put this conversation in air tank mode and make a sharp left turn and hear you gush about Arkham Knight because you got to play it and I didn't, and I want it to be my game of show?
Oh, I'm so jealous you got to play that.
Well, it certainly needs to be in the discussion for game of show. I know that Burnside last night was kind of down on it. I wonder if he got the same demo I did because I got to play an entire chapter. They told me it was chapter 2 of the game. And I went in with relatively low expectations, and that always helps with stuff, but it blew me away. Blew me away. Now, his primary criticism was that it didn't look really very next gen. And I get that. I mean, the Batman games have looked so good traditionally that this looks more like a Arkham game has looked. It's got a layer of shiny on it, but it certainly didn't look like The Order. My God, I just thought of that. What if that Batman game looked like The Order graphic?
Oh, boy.
Oh,
that'd
man. But gameplay. Gameplay. Holy crap. I was totally surprised at how the Batmobile really does change that game completely. Primarily because they have managed to figure out really smart ways to integrate the Batmobile into every facet of the game. It's literally another tool in your tool belt all the time. There's never a time when you can't use it. I mean, I guess if you're indoors.
What
but
about
anytime
when it loses
the
wheel and the Joker gets away?
That's only when Robin lays an egg, so we don't have to worry about that. And Robin's not in this game. But anytime you press L1, which, side note, it bugs me that the new PlayStation controller, the primary trigger is called L2 and the bumper is called L1. It confuses me every time. Mm-hmm. However, when you push the L1, anywhere you are, at any time, Batmobile shows up and you jump into it. No matter what, are you swinging through the city? Are you gliding? Are you fighting people? L1, Batmobile, you're in it. Amazing.
And that works and it doesn't break because how could this happen? You know what I mean? Like,
no, they like animate friggin' awesome transitions as they do with that game. Like that game, really the rock steady secret sauce is amazing transitions. In the combat system, you push one button and then you push another button. Amazing transitions between the two. You're flying through the city and then you do something else. Amazing transitions. Like that's what makes Batman feel so badass is because you do a couple of things and he does all the extra work to make him look awesome, you know? But But I haven't even gotten to the coolest part yet, right? So yes, it's cool that the Batmobile is constantly involved in what you're doing and can be at any time. And it really is an asset. But when you're in it, it has two modes. One is regular driving around the city at super fast speeds, Batmobile. You have a boost that shoots flames out the back, you know, just like you would expect from a Batmobile. And you go super fast and everything. But when you hold in the left trigger, your L2 button, instantly, the car transforms into tank mode. And in tank mode, all the four wheels kind of shoot out to the side and, I don't know how to explain this, and roll into sort of spheres. So the tires are kind of spheres, like roller balls. So you instantly have full 360-degree movement with the tank.
I feel like it's kind of like in Dark Knight Rises when he's on his bike and he, you know, like the wheels kind of roll over themselves.
Yes, exactly. Great point of reference. But what that translates to, what it effectively becomes, is you are completely mobile in any situation. You are maneuverable. You can get around corners. I found myself immediately going, drive, super fast. As soon as a corner comes up, do I e-brake? Heck no, I don't e-brake. I turn into a tank and can turn on a dime rotate around and then turn back into a car and shoot down the road. Amazing.
Car strafing.
Exactly.
I love it.
And then you get into these situations with bad guys where you get into, there's tanks attacking you, so you need to be in tank mode to fight them. And you're rolling around the environment, completely maneuverable, shooting them with your awesome tank guns. And it's got this cool thing, just like in the combat system when you're on foot, Batman, where you can level up things and do cool finishers. Same thing with the car. You do enough things without getting hit, you unlock a finisher and you can lock onto guys and it shoots this volley of missiles that shoot out, sort of like Panzer Dragoon, where you paint a bunch of targets and it shoots out. So they've basically managed to translate the awesome Batman combat system, melee combat system, onto a car, which is unbelievable that it works. And you always feel nimble and maneuverable, and being in the car is never a step back from your maneuverability. It's a step forward from your maneuverability. Whereas in every other game, being in a car and trying to get around a corner, or you get stuck in the geometry because the thing is too tight, never going to happen with this one because they figured it out.
Does it make the world seem too big when you're Batman? Because, you know, like, are the streets not narrow? Like, if you have a tank combat arena, what does it feel like if you walk through that area? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Well, I was dropped into a chapter mission, a very lengthy mission that took about 45 minutes for me to get through. So I was never in, only at the very beginning when I sort of jumped in to trigger that story beat.
Got it.
Was I ever in the wide open world? So I never got a chance to just kind of wander around. So I can't really answer that. But within the context of the mission structure, the Batmobile, I was giggling and giddy with how empowered it made me feel, how cool it made me feel. And then there were specific puzzles that I had to solve where, for example, Batman comes upon this this elevator shaft that's broken and it's down at the bottom, at the, you know, three stories down, and he needs to ride that elevator up. So what he does is he can always at any time radio control his Batmobile. So you can, and then it just shoots you over to control the Batmobile while Batman is still standing persistent in the environment. And you can drive the Batmobile, blast through this wall, tether to the counterweight of the elevator, and then drive backward like a giant, you know, bulldozer, yanking this elevator up through the environment. So, and then you switch back to Batman and you get in the elevator and then you switch back into the car and you lower him down. Now, that's a very simplistic explanation of the kinds of things you can do, but it makes you feel awesome because you literally have to think outside the box because you have the ability to be both in the box and outside the box at the same time because you can use the car. And the same is true in combat situations. I was in a combat situation where Batman gets surrounded and I can drive the car behind everybody and start shooting them and distract them so then I can start pummeling them. There's just so many brilliant uses of this thing. It is completely integrated into the game. It's not just like, hey, now you get a car to drive around the city in. No, it's a gameplay mechanic through and through. And
Well, I'm throwing my money at the screen and nothing's happening. So you just, I'm pretty sure I'm sold. And
the other thing that I thought was really smart.
You just sold it. They just put you in the commercial,
I know,
Jeff.
Right? I will freely accept that. Although no one paid me for this, believe me. The other thing that I thought was really clever is here now you've given yourself a problem where you have a character who by his very nature is defined by the fact that he doesn't murder anybody. And you've given him a tool that lets you mow down as a player, mow down anybody in the street, right? Well, and it's also got a giant cannon on the top. They solved that in a very clever way, I think. And maybe some people might consider it a cop-out, but I thought it was clever. The Batmobile has an electromagnetic field around it. So when you run over guys, it electrocutes them and knocks them unconscious. So they don't die, but it knocks them to the side so that you can't continue running over them. Pretty smart. And also when you go and you start shooting, when the Batmobile starts shooting at characters, at people, at bad guys, instead of at the wall, it automatically switches to rubber bullets. So it only ever knocks them unconscious, which, you know, it's semantic perhaps, but I thought it was clever and kind of cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's something that the right. Batman franchise works with, but it also is in line with his character. Like he has gadgets that, yes, is it a cheeky wink where like, oh, no one dies? Yeah, but is that how the Batman character is portrayed in comics as well? Yeah, it is. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, somebody do the Christian Bale growl and say, no guns.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Christian, I was completely blown away. My expectations were totally exceeded. The Rocksteady guys are so smart and making the game feel new and fresh. There's also new ways for Batman to get around the city. He can now chain grapples, so you don't have to grapple to one surface and then stop and then grapple to the next surface. You can grapple and then in midair grapple again and continue doing that over and over to get to the top of high buildings easier. It just was instantly rewarding and fun to use the Batmobile. It felt like no other vehicle has ever felt in a video game before, which I think if you have such an iconic item in a game, you don't want it to feel like any other thing.
It's a big deal.
So I loved it.
That's awesome. That's like, I feel like Destiny is kind of doing some of that too, in the sense that, you know, it's Bungie and they have such iconic vehicles. You know, the way the Warthog handles is probably in the Smithsonian somewhere, right? Like the control mechanism they used for that. It's so Halo. You know, like you get in a Warthog, right, you know exactly how it's going to feel. And then with Destiny now, with the introduction of the speeder bikes, it has its own, like whatever they do, whatever their secret sauce is for making vehicles feel ultimately familiar but different, like a ghost is different than a warthog is different than a banshee. So you get on the speeder bike and you're like, I know exactly what I'm doing, but it feels like something new. And I love that. It's like, I think the Batmobile, where it's like, this is a thing you know and love, but now it feels new and exciting. Like, I'm so angry I didn't get to play this game.
Yeah.
I am very sad as well. I didn't get to.
Well, it looks like a bunch of us are going to get to play with the alpha this weekend.
Oh, Destiny or Batman?
Yeah.
Oh, Destiny. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
I'm bummed I didn't get to play Batman. Yeah, Destiny. Jump in that alpha, man. It's cool. I kind of snuck in and didn't get full time with it that other people were getting, where the customization you have for your characters and stuff, I feel like you could spend hours just how you want to outfit your avatar and how you want to enter the world. I forget if someone else on this show had said it, maybe yesterday, I don't remember. I tried to listen to most of the show while I was driving, but like it to me, Destiny is both one of my most anticipated games and one of my something still doesn't quite feel right, but I know the game has to be almost done. We're like, I don't know if it's the allusion to kind of Borderlands that we've put on it, the expectations that we've put on it to be like a Borderlands, but it doesn't have the same treasure chest explosion when you kill people that like Borderlands or Diablo gets you. Like, I love seeing those numbers flying.
Ooh, pinata.
And it doesn't do that, but then it's also hard to demo these games where I feel like what it will do better than Borderlands and what, you know, they talk about is, you know, Jeff, or if I see you guys playing, I run over to you, I start attacking the big thing you're attacking, and we're, you know, now in an event, which is like an MMO style thing, but then I can just leave it and I don't have to worry about you ruining my game or whatever. And that's the secret sauce that I think would make Destiny awesome. And that's also the hardest secret sauce to play in a 20-minute demo on a show floor.
It's a lot of sauce.
It's some of the games, it's very hard to sort of showcase what your game can do.
Yeah.
In that
I feel
short
like Drive Club and Destiny will either be my favorite games of this year, or I can't wait for Drive Club and Destiny 2 because they'll do it right.
I really wish you had gotten a chance to play a World of Speed. It was sort of up in its own little hidden private media room up in the second floor. But, you know, I'm not really a racing guy like you are, Christian, but it was intriguing. The idea with it's a free-to-play racer. Yes. Don't leave. Don't leave. Just keep listening.
Sorry. I stepped out.
It's free to play. It could be a good thing. It looked really great. It looked comparable to all the other racing games that were not free to play. And the idea is they're trying to make a racing MMO in the sense that it plays like an MMO where you have quests and you get loot and you level up and you have people that you do a quest with. You have a party of adventurers and you go and you do these racing quests. And the way they make that work is pretty clever. They give you these various objectives that you have to accomplish in the race. And they said one of the major design ideas was that in a racing game, there's the desire to be first and that's it. It's like finish first. And then most of the people who are playing don't finish first.
Yeah.
But one guy does. He has a great time.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
he's like a hat.
But in this game, finishing first is only one of several objectives that your entire team has to accomplish in order to complete the mission, in order to complete the quest. So you have to also, you know, drift for a certain number of feet or, I don't know, those kinds of things.
Like Fast and the Furious online.
Right. But no, not everybody, they are mutually exclusive. So you can't accomplish all of them and just be the single hero who wins the match. Your team would be constituted by different role players in the same way that an MMO would be, you know, a cleric and a, you know, a healer, a mage and a tank, whatever. In this game, you have like the guy with the slide tires and the car that works best to do drifting. And he's going to be on your team shooting for that drifting goal. And then you have the big muscle car driving guy who's a tank who's going to shoot for the goal of knocking people off the road. And then there's going to be the other guy who's got the awesome fast car who's trying to win the race. And all of you, all of you have to accomplish your objectives and then the one guy has to win the race. So if the guy wins the race, but you didn't accomplish all the objectives, you didn't win. So it really becomes this team game. And I just thought that was so interesting and such a flip of the script when it comes to racing games. I was hoping you'd get a chance to check it out.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Drive Club is doing some of that stuff too.
World of Speed.
Say it again one more time.
World of Speed.
Awesome. Yeah, Drive Club's doing some of that. And also, I don't know if you guys can hear it, but a huge storm has rolled through where I am. So if I disappear, it's because I think Wyoming is getting smited off the earth. And
Well, I'm told that our mothership in Austin is under tornado watch right now. So
take it home with some best of shows and say stay safe and let's climb under some mattresses.
Well, while we're still alive and kicking, let's see if we can work through some of these calls because some of these people have been waiting quite a while to talk to us.
Bunker down, Austin.
Quickly just mention I opened up that box for the people in the chat room who were wondering what it was, the Witcher box, and it's actually a really amazing sort of little figure. It's of Geralt and he's carrying a head.
Yeah, and it also has, don't throw it away until you look, it's got a code for a full download of Witcher 3 when it comes out on GOG.
Yeah, I saw that. This is pretty much the best day of my life right now.
Yeah, so that was pretty nice gift of that for them to give all of the people who saw that game. Okay, 270, you are on the line. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what did you want to talk about?
My name's John. I'm calling from Kentucky. And actually, I'm playing the Destiny Alpha right now.
Oh, wow. Well. How is it?
Quit talking to us and focus. You're letting down everybody that you're playing.
I love it. actually I'm really loving it, and actually I'm the guy that made the ringtone for you for the show a long time ago, and I'm also the guy that was talking to a Christian last week about would Nintendo double down on the Wii U or Vita,
But as far as Destiny goes, I'm loving this game so much right now.
What's your favorite part about the game from the alpha? Like, what makes you love it so much? Were you a big Halo fan, or is this tickling? Is this scratching a new itch for you?
Actually, I'm probably going to make a lot of people hate me really quick. I've actually never played Halo. I enjoy the fact that I'm running around like fighting a boss, and then all of a sudden people can jump in and start shooting with me. And it's just something different that I've never actually played before.
This is exactly the thing we were talking about earlier, this trend of this cooperative experience that everybody likes. It's more fun playing with friends. It's more fun playing with people who are working toward a common goal. And I think that's another example of this current zeitgeist right now. So I'm excited to get my hands on it as well. We got another call here from 413 area code. Hello, what's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's your question about E3?
Hi, I'm Dave. I'm from Massachusetts. I want to hear what your game of the show was.
That is a good question. We're getting some weird audio issues. Maybe that's Tornado Watch.
Death
but
from
yeah,
the
let's
sky
let's talk about
what you're hearing, Jeff. It's Death from the Sky.
Ashley? What is your game of show?
Oh man, that I played, that I was able to put my grubby little paws on and play, I would probably say, oh my God, it's a toss up. I would say between The Order, which I really enjoyed. I overly enjoyed. I would say that and Ori and the Blind Forest. Yeah. Like I'm kind of obsessing over that game.
Yeah, that is a beautiful, magical game.
The platforming controls are just so tight and they're so good, and it's very difficult to do that right. And the game just feels so organic. You just pick up a controller and it just feels so natural to play it. And it's really incredible what they've done.
Yeah, I heard the Microsoft guys actually comment that they had internal discussion about potentially starting their press conference with that game as a way to set the tone.
They didn't.
I think that would have been kind of cool. Very, very different if they had started with a game of that tone. It would have really changed the whole tenor of that conference, but it's an interesting, it's a beautiful game, and I can't wait to play it too. Excellent choices. Christian, what would you say are your games of show or game of show?
Yeah, I'm trying to run through in my, it's crazy how quickly it becomes a blur, right, where you move from game to game to game. So I'll rattle off some yeah, games of show, and the way I'm defining it is just they were awesome and fun and great vertical slices and surprised me. You know, took me, like, I love that about E3 is the surprises, where some games I play and it's like, yeah, that's great. I knew it'd be great. Splatoon is really high up there. Great game, as you talked about yesterday. The motion control option works really well and is a fun way to play it. I don't know if that's the way I would main the game per se, but a new IP from Nintendo, definitely up there, game of show. Super fun and inventive. And I swear I'm getting no money for this, and I know I love my Vita, but man, Counterspy blew me away. Like, so cool. And I just happened to tweet about it randomly, and then John Davison is the one that hooked me up with Dave. He's like, hey, you should talk to the guy who makes it. And I was like, yes, please. Just gorgeous. It seems like my style of game. If that game is, you know, what my hands-on time with it represented it to be, I think I'm going to love, love, love that game. And Drive Club, man, don't let me down. You tickled me with a feather last year and then got delayed, and now you're coming back and you're gorgeous. And I always root for that, my style of perfect racer, where it's not too arcadey, not too simmy, and it's just perfect and it looks gorgeous. And if that friend integration is like the next level of, you know, what Burnout kind of pioneered with challenges and leaderboards and taking that stuff from twin stick shooters that are very popular, or even, you know, Trials. If it really does all of that in this gorgeous, gorgeous racing game, that's super high up on my list. And then the last one is, come on, don't blank on me now, brain, keep going. Insomniac Games. Xbox One.
Sunset Overdrive.
Man, Overdrive? That game looks gorgeous, and my only hang up on it was going to be if it controlled well. I think it does. Now my question mark is just how engaging is the single player? But based on what I was able to play, it lived up to the hype that I saw for it. So those are the games that I'm leaving E3 super jazzed about.
Yeah, as for my picks, it's interesting. I was thinking, you know, I think my top two might be The Witcher 3 and The Division. And then I went, wait a minute. Last year, my games of show were The Witcher 3 and The Division.
It needs to be games so you play, I say, because otherwise it's No Man's
Sky. It's a little bit.
Yeah, see, that's, I wanted to say something that I put my hands
on. Okay, well, that's fair enough. But I would say that No Man's Sky is certainly up there. But I just was excited about both of those games so much. And then I thought a year ago at this time, I was saying the exact same two games. And that was a little sad.
It is.
but so if it's games that I put my hands on, The Order, Batman, which I never thought I would say. I really thought I was tired of that franchise, but I was grinning ear to ear, giggling like a schoolboy, just doing fun stuff with the Batmobile, which was awesome. And I think Splatoon deserves a mention in there, although I don't know how obsessively I would play that game. I think it would be a fun diversion for a little while. What other games? I feel like No Man's Sky is the one that comes out of the conference with the most momentum. Maybe Sunset Overdrive. I think Sunset Overdrive did a great job. It showed really well, and it makes me very excited that it's coming out this year, which is something I can't say for any of the other games I just mentioned. So that's a big deal. That's a big deal. And Bloodborne, which I've talked about in previous shows. Oh, and Far Cry 4.
That's the thing.
I'm saying too many.
It's easy to get, to joke, 2015 or, it's a bunch of sequelitis. You know, I think this E3 was pretty gangbusters. I think the industry, actually, as you were saying, it's the best time to be a gamer. You have games like The Order coming, and you have about the same time to play Ori. At the same time, you'll play Smash Brothers. And, dude, that's awesome. This was a good show. It's easy to be pessimistic, but it was, I think, a really good E3.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there was so much diversity in gaming. And there are people in the chat room right now like saying like, oh, we always hear how E3 should go away. And that's true. Like there's so much cynicism in the industry. We see it in tech all the time too. And that just irritates me because, first of all, it's the same as gaming. It's never been a better time to live in the land of technology. I mean, we have such cool things now. And I still get enthusiastic about it. And enthusiasm is cool. And I was so happy to see so much diversity on the show floor. It wasn't all, a bunch of Mortal Kombat or a bunch of guns, guns, guns. Like, I mean, it was just really a lot of awesome creative games from so many different kinds of
now
developers.
We just need more diversity in our protagonists.
Don't get me started on that.
Well, you'll come back. Let's do another show because I do want to touch on that, but
let's do a special show.
Yeah,
we were doing rehearsals for my show Tomorrow Daily this week, and we do this thing that's a little bit like Weekend Update to start the show, where we have sort of a headline and then a joke. And one of them this week for rehearsal for me was Ubisoft announced that they could not include a female assassin model in Assassin's Creed Unity because it would be, quote, too much extra work. And in a related story, wives and girlfriends of Ubisoft devs are withholding sexy time for the very same reasons.
Well said. Well said. Yeah. I ranted about that last night, but it's staggering to me. Ridiculous.
It's a little silly. It's really disappointing, I think, more than anything, because Ubisoft knows better. That's the hard part.
And I was appreciative of the Sunset Overdrive devs who made a point to say you can look however you want. The character creation is a big deal in that game, and the character that they show in all the cinema is not the character. It's a character that you create. It's you. So, which I bravo. Yeah. Ashley, thank you so much for driving like a Batmobile out of hell to get here and hanging out with us. We really appreciate it. It was so awesome having you.
I had so much
fun. Thank you. We got to have you back again sometime. And
I would love it.
Good luck on your show. Tell people how they can watch you and your stuff in the future.
Yeah. Okay. So if you guys didn't hear the intro, I work at CNET and I have a new show launching. It's been a few months in the making. It's a daily talk show and it's called Tomorrow Daily. And I will be hosting that starting on Monday, which is very terrifying and exciting for me. And I would love it if you would come by and check it out. And it won't be, you know, perfect, but we think it's pretty fun and we're all about enthusiasm and technology. So you can head over to cnet.com and look for Tomorrow Daily. I will be forwarding tomorrowdaily.com to our show page as soon as it goes live on Monday. But you'll have to wait a little bit for that. As of right now, it just has the logo. But yeah, we're all about kind of the same thing that you guys do here, which is, you know, we really like to hear from our viewers and I'm all about that. And I'm really excited to be able to, you know, get people's input about all the different things happening in tech and gaming and, you know, geek culture and also have a lot of fun along the way. So I hope you guys will tune in for that. And you could always find me on Twitter. I'm a huge social media. I'm all over social media all the time. So it's just Ashley Esqueva. And my last name is, while confusing to pronounce, it's spelled E-S-Q-U-E-D.
Yes, I realized that I mispronounced it all episode. I apologize.
That's okay. Some people have pronounced it Quesadilla, so you got a lot closer than that.
You were so gracious and did not correct me every time, and I kept repeating the mistake. I apologize for that.
No, it's all good. It's a very not traditional name that people are used to seeing. So, and the D, it's Basque, so the D sounds like a TH, so it's like the at the end of the name instead of, but the D trips people up.
Indeed. Well, thanks again for being on. Christian, what about you? What you got going on this week other than being in a danger zone?
I'm in a danger zone. I'm back in LA Tuesday, the 17th. If you're in Los Angeles, that's the next edition of my Nerdist Industries podcast and live stand-up show, What's New, which you can find on iTunes, or come out to the live show on Tuesday, the 17th. Jackie Cashin is going to be headlining. You can Google her, see her set from Conan. Got a great podcast herself called The Dork Forest. I'd love to see you at people at that show. And then if you're on the East Coast, I'm in New York City the 25th through the 29th. I'm doing two of the show I created for UCB out here, Improv versus Stand Up. I'm going to be on the show. We spun it off for New York, so I'm going to be on the New York version of that. And then a bunch of other stand-up shows in New York City. And man, thank you guys, everyone that listened to this show and chimed in and chatted with us this week doing these live shows. They've been so much fun. I saw, you know, at various points throughout the week, we were the number one video game show on the iTunes charts, and that's awesome and humbling. And please keep giving those reviews. We love, you know, it really helps the show. It seems silly, but that all builds into iTunes algorithm, which helps find new people to find the show. And, you know, there are millions and millions of gamers out there. And I'm super proud of what Jeff and I do on this show and what we put out into the world and having you guys involved with it. So help us spread the love. And thanks for being an awesome community. A lot of times E3 can become a bicker fest and you guys have been amazing. So thank you. Thank you so much. I'm really humbled by this experience. It's been awesome.
I second all of that. I also want to thank David Nottingham and Anthony Carboni for taking the time tonight to call in for the show. Thank you to all the callers. I'm sorry we couldn't get to everybody. There's a bunch of people still online that have been waiting for a long time, and we really appreciate it. It's fun changing up the time of the show. These evening shows allowed other people to call in that don't usually have the opportunity, but we're back doing our normal Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time live shows starting next week. So we hope that you can hang out with us then at 5by5.tv/live. We're going to survive this. I'm going to pass out. Actually, I have to get on an airplane tomorrow morning and fly to a wedding in the Midwest. But this has been one heck of a week. And I'm certainly grateful for everybody that hung out with us, that listened to the show, that downloaded the show, that sent in questions and comments on Twitter and by email as well.
And 5by5, thank you all. Being awesome.
Yes. And the producers, Zach and Miranda at 5by5. Dan and Hattie always supporting the show and giving us the room and breath. And Jason Snell for Monday. That was the nicest thing ever when he stepped aside and let us have the time slot. So we're really lucky to have a cool gang there and you as a cool gang hanging out with us. So without further ado, we'll wrap up this E3 with one last Hype Train theme song. Let's listen to it. We'll ride out. And until next time, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place. Good night.